comes the sun, and I say it's alright.
Welcome to IPOS On Air with Noah Mee. Join us every Friday night at 7 p.m. only on Double Radio 92.7 FM. And welcome back to another show. I would like to introduce Emily Miller, or as I know, Miss Miller. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, Noemi. Thanks for having me. My name's Emily Miller, and I am a teacher in MMSD, specifically West High, where I currently teach social studies. And I've been there, goodness, 21 years.
Well, it's great having you on the show. I know I see you in class for the last semester of my senior year. And I also saw you on Wednesday, too, which was great. I don't know if you kind of want to talk about where we were.
Sure. It was a wonderful opportunity to kind of extend this school year beyond the four walls of West High. Noemi and her group organized a visit to a farm, which
Janet Faust
Farm in Jefferson County, and it's significant because it's right next door to a CAFO, and Janet's group. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of her group, her organization. Do you remember what they're called? I know I'm forgetting, but their organization is trying to basically educate the community, the greater community of Jefferson County, as well as Wisconsin, the state, about the implications of CAFOs and what they're doing to our drinking water, to the land. Specifically, she lives next to a cattle, a dairy CAFO, but her outreach group is working with people who are advocating to educate about chicken CAFOs as well.
And there's a number of CAFOs in Jefferson County alone, and in Wisconsin alone, there's 321 CAFOs in the state of Wisconsin, which is quite alarming, seeing the impact of just that one CAFO and seeing the impact of all of that. Just the magnitude of all the different issues that are intersected with that specific CAFO, whether that's with the air pollution, long-term health conditions, the water quality. There's a lot of issues that are intersected.
Yeah. Specifically, do you want to say what the CAFO stands for?
Yeah, so CAFO does stand for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations, which is similar to kind of like the definition of a factory farm. And
I think the requirements were to qualify as a CAFO, you have to have over 1,000 animal units.
So that doesn't necessarily mean an animal by itself, since there are younger animals.
It goes by the size.
Yeah.
So for cattle, it's actually fewer than 1,000 head would qualify as a CAFO, but for chicken, smaller mammals, it would be a larger number that qualifies that unit. But what was so alarming about this place that we visited, or we didn't actually go on the CAFO, but we went around it, was that on 44 acres of land, they've got 3,000 head of cattle.
Yeah.
And the lagoon itself, which disposes of the animal waste, the manure, was 4.4 acres large.
Yeah.
And which is huge, just huge. If you remind me, Noemi, I think that in terms of the disposal for the manure, 10% of what's disposed or can 10%. Oh, gosh, I wish I had my notes with me. 10%, there can be allowed leaching out the lagoon pits of 10%.
The amount of waste that can be in this area, it's considered to be diluted.
Right.
Except that it does have such a major impact on the land and the area around it. I think another thing that we were learning is how the waste is managed or not managed. And that the waste quite literally has to be taken out two times per year, the liquid manure
to clean it out
has
right.
to be pumped out of the kind of vats that it's in and removed. And I think that they said that it that there were 39 times per hour for these two periods of the year that they were removing this in truckfuls
over a 2-week period.
Yeah.
And that was just for the cleaning. I mean, it's mm-hmm. constantly being piped out, but
right.
that was the main.
Yeah.
Which is just monumental.
Yeah. And so when we were on this field trip, we had one student from Memorial, two of our independent study students, and then myself and Miss Miller as well. And so I guess, what do you think of kind of like the impact on those students and kind of the impact on education having these opportunities?
It was significant because as we were meeting with this group, Janet, as well as her colleagues that are also part of this organization that she's created,
mm-hmm.
Students I could see were figuring out ways that they could match their talents to the needs of the organization to help mobilize and be activists. For example, one of the students that came with us, the young woman from Memorial,
mm-hmm.
her interest is in computer programming,
mm-hmm.
and yet she's passionate about protecting the environment and social justice. And so one of the asks that Janet asked the students was that she really needed help with keeping up the website and
mm-hmm.
The data collection and inputting the data and making the website more user-friendly. And this particular student readily volunteered to help her with that. So mm-hmm. It was wonderful because on the drive up to the farm, this student was trying to brainstorm with me as we were driving how she could use her programming skills
mm-hmm.
to help the environment. And I said, my goodness, any environmental organization needs data analysis and needs programmers. And so it was just really satisfying to see that connection take place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think field trips like this are just so wonderful because students can see how the skills they're learning in school can be applied in the real world
mm-hmm.
for things that they feel passionate about. So it was really beautiful to see.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think also just kind of looking at the way that kind of how people solve climate change and this idea that, you know, like you have to be kind of like a climate scientist or you have to do this really doesn't apply in the real world because you have all of these different talents coming to this and you can really take an environmental stance, whatever opportunity you choose or whatever career path you choose,
yeah.
Which I think was really obvious there as well.
Absolutely. One of the other asks that Janet had was she'd like to organize not really a festival, but the
mm-hmm.
day, kind of just an educational outreach day.
Yeah.
And she needed help with the organizing.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be a soil scientist to be able to help organize
mm-hmm.
Or to be able to help think of educational activities to make the science understandable to children and
mm-hmm.
young adults. And so I think some of the students saw how they could help with that as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think also kind of, I was just wondering too, if this was something that you see being integrated into the school day as well, or if that's something that still needs to be brought in.
Well, I would love it to. Field trips are always a little tricky,
mm-hmm.
especially during COVID. It's been hard.
Yeah.
I usually, for example, in gender studies, I usually would have a couple guest speakers in. And
mm-hmm.
this year, I just kind of dropped the ball on that because of COVID. And so
mm-hmm.
I need to get back into that. I think that in order to make, I mean, it's one thing having speakers come in, it's harder to actually take the field trips.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a school system, we need to restructure the way we do school
mm-hmm.
so that we can make it more just easier to be able to do these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
We just have many different demands on our instructional time, mm-hmm. Whether it be standardized testing or whatnot. And so the school day needs to be reorganized, I think, in a way so that we can have these kind of hands-on experiences in the community.
Yeah, for sure. And which classes do you teach?
Currently, I teach world history, modern U.S. history, gender studies. Mm-hmm. I'm a social studies teacher, but I've taught English and I've mm-hmm. taught different things in social studies. But I think the beauty of teaching social studies is it's very, there's a lot of intersectionality, as we were mm-hmm. saying, with science or with right. English, with so much that we could partner with different departments in the school mm-hmm. To not only create cross-sectional interdisciplinary classes, mm-hmm. but to figure out ways that those interdisciplinary classes can connect directly with the community.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. How long have you been at West?
21 years. Yeah, yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've taught, holy cow, I've probably taught 25 different classes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I started out in ESL, doing ESL English and History, and then I taught English and social studies. So mm-hmm. there's always a lot of room to grow in education. I think it's a falsehood when people look and go, oh, you're a teacher. You've been doing the same thing for 20 years. No year is the same. No day is the same. Even if you're teaching the same class, the students always make it different. And the world makes it different because our world keeps changing. And so the beauty of especially teaching social studies is to be able to make those connections between what we're learning in class and what's going on in current events and social issues that are impacting our world today.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much.
And yeah,
we'll be
pleasure.
Right back. Thank you.